Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70 celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm Ted Berg, joined as always by the Athletics Mets beat writer Tim Britton. And Tim, we've got some news that you very much predicted on this show last time we spoke.
Yeah, I mean, I think just about everyone following the Mets predicted, you know, once we heard from Sandy Alderson last week that Luis Rojas was not going to be back as the Mets manager in 2022. You know, Alderson saying last week that, you know, they had to make certain decisions before they hired a president of baseball operations, and that those decisions would be made with the potential hire in mind and maintaining flexibility, I think was the word he used. Yeah. And when you say that, that's saying like, that means not bringing back the manager. It probably means we have not heard yet, but not bringing back most, if not all, of the coaching staff as well. I think Jeremy Hefner, as the pitching coach, probably has the best chance of staying with the Mets, and even that is not a sure thing at this point. So, you know, this was the first domino in the offseason. I think, you know, it happened quickly. It happened on Monday afternoon, the day after the season ended. That's generally the considerate thing to do. You don't want to make these guys sit around and wait for a week or something. The Mets kind of did that last time with Mickey Callaway waiting, I think, until Friday of the week after the season to make the move. So, you know, this is what I think we were all ready for. You know, we can talk about the pros and cons of letting go of Luis Rojas. We can talk about candidates for the manager position. The candidates is tough to go through at this point because we don't know who's making that hire, and that's probably the bigger thing. Like the Mets are going to be managerless for a little while here. It's going to be a longer time than usual without one because they've got to do the hiring above that first.
Right, but I do want to talk a little bit about, I guess you said we can talk about pros and cons. So let's talk a little, you know, I think the pros are pretty obvious, right? The new president of baseball operations, the new GM, get a clean slate with the manager to hire whoever their person is. And that's got to be a pro, right? You want to know that the manager's on the same page as the front office. As you've pointed out several times, like the last... The Rojas himself and Callaway, like there has never really been that sort of like synchronicity between, or at least hasn't been for several years, that the GM having someone we know is his guy as the manager. And so that's an advantage, I think, moving forward. But the con is, it seems like Luis Rojas is a good baseball guy. It seems like the players did like him a lot. It seems like a lot of what went wrong this year wasn't really his fault. There were some questionable tactical decisions, certainly, but every single manager in the majors is guilty of that to some extent. And I guess the Met fan, like, hey, Paul Sewald is a really good pitcher now, and Chris Flexen is the ace of a nearly playoff team. That paranoia for me is like, okay, now Luis Rojas is going to go manage the Padres next year and win 103 games.
Yeah, so the pro, you're right. Like, you know, it's been since the start of 2018, really, that the Mets have had the guy who hired the manager and the manager working together. And that was Alderson and Callaway for just a couple of months before Alderson took a leave of absence because, you know, Brody Van Wagenen inherited Callaway and let him go after a year. And then you had Alderson inherit Rojas and let him go after a year. So it'll be good to have that proper dynamic of a head baseball executive who hired a manager and works with him. With Rojas, like you said, I don't think the reason he's not coming back as manager is because he didn't intentionally walk Brian De La Cruz or anything like that.
He should have.
I think, you know, Lewin Diaz has been excellent since then, by the way.
Changed a career-changing event for Lewin Diaz.
I think when you look at it, there was really for the last couple of months, you felt this growing disconnect between how the clubhouse in general viewed itself and its talent and how the front office was talking about it. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to even before the trade deadline, if you remember, like Zach Scott talking about how they'd been a mediocre team for most of the season. And the Mets clubhouse talking about, you know, how much talent there was in the room and how confident they were that they were going to contend not just for the National League East, but for a National League pennant. And as things kind of spiraled on them in August and September, Rojas, with his even-keeled demeanor, with his positivity, for the most part, there were times where he was harsher on them, wasn't able to steer them out of that skid. The players really liked him. There are times when the players and a manager get along too well, if the front office certainly views this core group, the core group of position players, as one that hasn't had the results that you're looking for from a core group, and they're thinking about shaking it up. And I think Rojas is a guy who thinks that core group is good enough. You know, he knows them very well from his time in the minor leagues. And maybe they want more of an outside perspective, a guy who hasn't come up with these guys the same way as Luis Rojas has. I'll say this, you know, I've covered, I was doing the counting yesterday because I've covered baseball for 13 years. If you count my 2 years as an intern for MLB.com, one with the Mets, one with the Yankees, and I've been a beat writer for 11, and I've covered 10 different managers. And Luis was probably the easiest and nicest to deal with, as a reporter. He was just really approachable, really personable. Like you could talk to him about a lot of different things. And that's pretty remarkable considering the circumstances in that, like, we couldn't talk to him in person for a very long period, for the majority of his tenure. And so he was, from that perspective, it's tough to see him move on because I liked him a lot as a person. And I do wish him the best. And like you mentioned, the Sewald and Flexen thing, I think that concern is legitimate because, you know, you think about, like, why is Chris Flexen good now when he was never good with the Mets? And you think that, well, the Mets didn't give him the proper chance to succeed. You know, Chris Flexen wasn't good as a Met because he was making emergency spot starts with little notice and not on normal rest, because he was being shifted back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen, because they'd call him up and then he'd sit for 9 days and they'd be like, okay, go out, throw the 17th inning of this game and close it down. You know, like, that's not giving the guy the best chance to succeed at the major league level. And now in Seattle, he has, like, he is pitching like a normal pitcher. Like, he's gotten that chance. And you look at Rojas, and the Mets did not give him the best chance to succeed as a manager. You know, he was here for 220 games, and he worked with four different general managers, one of whom he never even met in person, in Jared Porter. He had to adapt to a lot of weird circumstances. And so there's a lot there that you say, like, give this guy the proper context to be a manager, and he's probably got a better chance of success than he had in New York. That doesn't mean you hold on to him just because of that. And we'll see if he stays within the organization. The Mets have given him that opportunity. I think there's a chance. You know, this is a guy who's been with the Mets since 2007, and feels really connected to the organization. One of the things he mentioned a few weeks ago when I was talking to him was how much he dislikes the, like, that's so Mets idea. Mm-hmm. And how he takes that personally, in a way that, you know, I've never really heard anyone else with the Mets say that before. So he does have, I think, loyalty to the organization, but, you know, this is all, they're also essentially firing him. And if there's another organization that wants to give him a job on a major league coaching staff or something like that, I'm reasonably sure that he would opt for that instead. So I think you see both sides of it here, but I think this was a move because you were bringing in a new head baseball executive that makes it simpler to do. If they were, you know, if they had a president of baseball ops and they were keeping that guy, then it would have been a little trickier. We would have gone deeper, I think, into the pros and cons of this. But I think because you were bringing someone new, it makes sense to kind of start fresh.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to make one point on Chris Flexen, which I know is very much a tangent from the subject of this podcast. But I will say in the Mets' defense that Flexen went to Korea in 2020, pitched more than most major leaguers did in 2020 for sure, because they had a much longer season there. Also seems to have like pretty clearly learned something or made some adjustment while pitching overseas, which is something we've seen of players before, like Miles Michaelis, I believe, had that same situation, and a few other guys. If you look at the stats, like there's a clear indication that a switch flipped for Chris Flexen. And I don't know how much I want to say, like, yeah, okay, so the Mets, that potential was clearly there, right? And you know, why should the Doosan, I think it's the Doosan Bears, right? Why should they be able to unlock it and not the Mets? Yeah, like that's a fair criticism, but that is a phenomenon we have seen before, and it does seem like that's what's going on and what happened with Chris Flexen. Back to the manager.
I just need to throw in. It's great you said about Doosan unlock it, because you know who's one of Doosan's aces this season.
I don't.
Is Walker Lockett,
The
former Met, who's got a sub-3 ERA for the Bears in 21 starts. So get ready for that next year.
Which makes me wonder, hey, who's the Doosan Bears pitching coach? And like, what's he doing next season? You know, like, I mean, I guess that sounds glib, but like, I don't know. I would be open to absolutely anything if I were the Mets. And I guess there would be probably some hiccups with like translation, but someone communicated to Chris Flexen, and I'm not sure that he speaks Korean.
It seems like it's working out for them, so let's see what it can do over here.
I'm serious. I mean, you know, there are and it's like sort of that same idea. Instead of like having an outside eye, an objective eye, right? Like, I think back to. Like I mean, Aroldis Chapman was one case, and a bunch of like the early wave of Japanese pitchers all threw weighted balls to train. And at that time, it was like unheard of. And it seemed like people said, like, they're going to rip up their arms. It was not recommended. And now every guy throws weighted balls to train, right? Like they were the East was clear, and Cuba, were clearly ahead of the US in like that aspect of pitcher training. And so like, it's certainly not, inconceivable that this pitching coach in Doosan, and like this is not something I've thought about before this. Like I don't know who it is. I don't know anything about him, but like if you're the new president of baseball operations for the New York Mets under $10 billion owner Steve Cohen, like, and there's a guy out there, no matter where he is, or a woman, and wherever they are in the world, that can like get the best out of your players, like go find him. You know, I don't know. Like, I that sounds like pie in the sky a little bit, but like, why not?
I'm just looking at their roster, and Ariel Miranda, who also is an ex-Met, has an even better ERA this year. 2.33 in 24 starts. So whatever Doosan is doing is
well, there's also, I think that the Korean League, I don't know how it's been the last few years, but I know that they had like a few years where they were like wild swings in league-wide numbers because they were, I think, like adjusting the ball for a few years. And there was like one year where no one hit and one year where everyone hit. But Doosan, you know, 792 team OPS. So doesn't seem outrageous. Like that's a pretty good offensive environment, I would guess. And like you said, like, yeah, Chris Flexen, Raul Alcantara, like there are a bunch of guys having really nice seasons or who had really nice seasons there over the last couple of years. So I don't know. This is an idea I just came to, but I'm calling whoever is the pitching coach of the Doosan Bears if they put me in charge, and they should.
Back to Rojas.
And we're bringing back Walter Lockett. You mentioned Ron Washington. My sense, and I don't think this is true, but my guess would be that if the Mets hired Ron Washington to be their manager, and Ron Washington is a very popular guy around baseball, like you said in your column, he's known as like a wonderful infield coach, like he, you know, for teaching guys how to work with their hands, footwork, all those things. Like even if you see him anywhere in spring training, wherever he's coaching, like he'll always have infielders around him doing drills, and I've seen him explain some of them like in really interesting and straightforward terms and help you understand how they make players better. Like he seems like a very good coach and he's had some success as a manager. But my expectation would be if the Mets hired him, you'd get a lot of Mets fans disappointed simply because he's a guy who has been around the league and who isn't like it's not sexy to hire Ron Washington.
Yeah, I mean, it's sexy to hire, I guess, Carlos Beltran, right?
Yes,
that's
yes.
What the Mets tried last time. I think when you look at the reason I mentioned Washington was because, you know, he was a finalist in San Diego a couple of years ago when they hired Jace Tingler. I think it was down to Tingler and Washington. And the Padres, I think, can say pretty clearly, and we're recording this on Tuesday morning. I don't know if they've officially fired Tingler yet, but I believe everything was moving in that direction there. That was probably the wrong decision for them. That Washington would have made more sense for them. And I think, you know, for some of the same reasons that he could make more sense for the Mets as a team that could use someone who has won as a big league manager before. You know, Ron Washington, despite like a miserable last season in Texas in 2014, has a record above 500. He won 90 plus games in four straight years. He won 87 plus games in five straight years and you know, won two pennants with the Rangers. You know, he's won at the big league level. He's experienced with, you know, he works with current players. It's not like he's out of touch in mm-hmm. any way, despite being a veteran manager, which I think is one of the concerns you would have with some other guys who haven't stayed in the game the way that Washington has. You know, his in-game moves, if you remember thinking back to the 2011 World Series between him and Tony La Russa, it was not like a series of brilliant maneuvers by both sides. The World Series is often not a series right. of brilliant maneuvers by both sides. I just remember when, you know, Dusty Baker was brought up as a candidate for the Mets job, when they hired Beltran, every fan was like, how could you hire Dusty Baker? He's the worst in-game manager you can have. And Dusty Baker has just won a division with his fifth different major league team. Like, you know, there's more to it than what happens between 7 and 10, as we've talked about a lot. It's harder to evaluate those other things without being in there. But I think those are the more important aspects of being a manager, especially now where a lot of what you do between 7 and 10 isn't necessarily dictated by you or your philosophy. So I thought, you know, I don't know how realistic Washington individually is for the Mets, but I think that's the kind of person that makes a lot of sense for them. A guy, you know, you're going to hear different assistant coaches from major league teams. You know, Joe Espada was a guy that they had talked to a couple of years ago before they hired Beltran, that type of guy. You know, Washington is in the same vein, except he has the major league experience of managing the Rangers for several years and being successful at it. So I think that's a reason he stands out, at least to me, very early in the process before we even know who's going to be doing the hiring.
Yeah, I guess I would like to just head off at the pass the notion that someone like Ron Washington, someone like Dusty Baker, who they're not going to hire because he's got a job and doing well at it, but like a guy like that couldn't succeed in contemporary baseball. And I know I brought this up, I think, last week. Terry Collins had as miserable a stint with the Angels as you could possibly imagine a manager having. Like, there was a clubhouse mutiny. And if you talk to Angels fans, they said, like, this guy put himself in front of the team, which is, like, you know, a cardinal sin for a manager. And then you think about Terry Collins' tenure with the Mets, and it's like, that's just not that guy at all, right? Like, you think about the ass in the jackpot video and, like, how much he cared about his players. Like, there was just, like, so much, like, weird sort of tenderness of it to him. And he said it himself, like, he changed. And so I think we, you get a lot of, like, arguments based on cliches. Like, people just say, well, a leopard can't change its spots, and, like, and act like that's a good enough argument for, like, why a guy should or shouldn't be the Mets manager. And that's not true of human beings, right? Like, even if you're in your 60s or 70s, like, you could still be learning and adjusting and you know, keeping yourself viable in baseball. It's probably harder to do. You need to have an open mind, but these people are in the top, you know, 0.01% of people in their profession. And so there's got to be a reason Ron Washington's still around and still a managerial candidate.
Right. And you know, has connected with players in Atlanta, certainly. I think our David O'Brien, who covers the Braves for The Athletic, wrote a long thing with Washington in the last week that shows the way, you know, he's got a fantastic way of putting things at times, when you talked about kind of the way the Mets and Phillies let the Braves left them stick around in the division and then blow by them in the month of August. But the connection that he still has with his infielders, and you're right, like, you know, I was in Atlanta over the weekend, and every day before, you know, while the rest, even before the Braves take batting practice or don't take batting practice, depending on the day, Washington is out there playing pepper, basically, with each different infielder on his knees, you know, hitting them quick ground balls. And that, you know, look, Gary DeSarcina does that a lot with the Mets as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, you see him doing all of the things that a coach needs to be doing. There doesn't seem to be a huge ego there, I think. So he just stands out early to me, but I'm sure that we're going to hear a lot of different candidates. I'm sure he's going to be a candidate elsewhere as well this offseason, because I think, you know, you look at some of the reasons teams with talent have not succeeded, and a lot of it can be like a communications issue, a lack of experience issue, a front office and manager either being too tight or not tight at all issue. These are all different ways of talking about the Padres. And teams, maybe you see teams go in a different direction from what they've done in the last couple of years in hiring younger, less experienced people.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
John Heyman tweeted earlier this week, Mets will soon contact Theo Epstein regarding their baseball president job and plan to request permission to interview Billy Beane and David Stearns after their clubs are out. At the time, he said the A's are done soon Sunday and pointed out the Brewers may linger for a while. So Heyman wrote, Theo could be up first as Mets try for a proven star. These are all names we've talked about before. I don't know, like, how... and not to undercut John's reporting, just like, you know, of course they're going to contact Theo Epstein, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was not a surprise, I think, to anyone, that they're at least going to chat with him. I've said this really since Theo left the Cubs last year. I don't think it's happening here.
Why? Why would you do that if you're Theo Epstein?
Right, exactly. I thought you were going in the other direction with your exasperation.
I am exasperated. I would love him to be the Mets president, but if I'm Theo Epstein, I'm not going to touch him with like a 30-foot pole.
Yeah, you've done it with the Red Sox. You've done it with the Cubs. Doing it with the Mets is not as romantic as winning a World Series with those other franchises. And you know, I think what he would want is people have said. Sorry, I have not done this reporting myself, but people have said what he's looking for is essentially what Derek Jeter has in Miami, which is like you are part of ownership and you are running the team from that level. And that position, the Mets don't have it yet. And Steve Cohen is not going to create that position because Steve Cohen takes a more active interest in how this team operates than Bruce Sherman in Miami, who is the guy who the control person there. So, if you're Theo Epstein, what you want doesn't exist exactly the way you want it in Queens. So I think he's got the freedom to decide, if and when he wants to rejoin a team. I don't think the conditions for that exist with the Mets. Bean and Stearns are the other two big names. And Bean did not close off speculation, certainly, yesterday in Oakland when he said that he takes it as a compliment that people are interested in the staff and that he doesn't respond to stories like this. He hasn't followed the news. Which is all interesting to see.
He's caught up in that soccer. He's caught up in Premier League soccer again, I guess.
Yeah, but he didn't say no. I think there might be a little bit more interest from Bean. I don't know that it means like he wants the job, but I think there might be more of a like when he if and when he talks to the Mets, he would think about he'd be intrigued by what they have to offer, and he'd contemplate it probably on a deeper level than Epstein at this point.
Yeah. On that regarding the request for permission thing, and I think we've discussed this at pretty great length, but like, Sandy Alderson's got Billy Bean's phone number, right? Like, do you really need? I don't know. Can you not have like some sort of? Is it tampering to have like just to see like, hey, what's up, man? How you love in Oakland? Like, what's going on with your job there? How do you not say like, are you interested? Just like, hey, ever think about maybe making a change?
Sandy Alderson is just sending him pictures of foliage and how nice it is in New York this time of year.
Lovely.
And wouldn't it be wonderful to be driving to a postseason game in Queens this afternoon, right? I am not sure exactly how the tampering rules work. I am sure that executives are allowed to have conversations with one another.
Well, they're friends, They're friends.
Bean has talked about idolizing Sandy Alderson in the past, not just like as a mentor, but as an idol. They get along, and Alderson obviously in 2020, spent time in the A's front office again, kind of as an advisor with Billy Bean. So yeah, like that, I am sure that, if Billy Bean really didn't want this job, that Sandy Alderson would know by now. So I think there is, I don't know how to characterize the interest, but I think there is some interest on his part.
Yeah. And on Bean, like I was suggesting on Epstein, like there is, and like I said before, Bean, it's like there, this is a solid opportunity to tarnish your reputation. And for Epstein, I think that's like an extreme case. Like if you were Theo Epstein, like you've been in charge of two teams and you ended both of their legendary World Series curses, right? Like I don't understand. I don't know how you ever go near running a baseball team again, because you need to be, he's obviously smart. He must know how unlikely any team president is to pilot a team to winning the World Series. Like, unless he's so arrogant as to think like he is significantly better at this than every one of these guys who like came up under him and are now running other franchises, then if I'm Theo Epstein, it's like, you know what? Like, I'm good with the commissioner's office doing something else. I want people to think about me every time a team needs a president for the rest of my life, but I'm never going to do it.
The kind of Bill Cowher NFL coach route.
Yeah.
If Epstein had just taken the Costanza departure at like the end of 2016, it was just like, that's it, I'm out, I've done it.
Harper Lee, right?
That is his legacy might be even stronger at this point. So yeah, I think Mets fans often, or there's at least a section of Mets fans who view the Mets as being in the same vein as the Red Sox and Cubs. They're not, which is good, because it means that their title drought is 50 years shorter than Boston's was, and even long, another 22 years on top of that for Chicago, and for Epstein, Boston was the hometown team, so that had obviously even greater appeal for him at that point. So Yeah, I guess there's a chance that he has interest in that that Steve Cohen is able to sell him on the idea or just pay him enough to make him interested. You know, you can give him like John Gruden did not seem all that interested in returning to the NFL to coach, and then they gave him $100 million,
right?
And he became more interested. You know, maybe there's that possibility, although that's not necessarily the guy you want to hire. Is the guy who's doing it for the paycheck. The Knicks know that with like Phil Jackson, right? So it'll be an interesting dynamic to see how it works out, but I still think that Epstein is less likely than most of the others.
We have a question related to this topic. It comes from Doug Berman, who's asked us a few questions in the past, always smart questions. I love this one. He says, I was listening to your discussion of front office poaching etiquette last week, that other clubs are normally given permission to speak to an employee about a job if they're offering a promotion, a boost in pay and title. And as you pointed out, this led to title inflation. He said, what if the Mets decide not to hire a president of baseball operations first, but a team president who manages a president of baseball operations, which would be our new title for general manager? Sandy Alderson becomes executive VP for business and operations, since presumably he doesn't care about things as mundane as titles anymore. And then you say, hello, Tampa Bay. We'd like to talk to Mr. Neander about a promotion to team president. It looks like he's a lowly president of baseball operations now. Hello, Mr. Milwaukee. We're wondering if Mr. Stearns might like to move his career along with a step up to a team president position. And as he points out, like, president of baseball operations is a new thing that teams invented to do exactly this. Like, why not keep going? And like, I would say push it even further, like make up new titles. Like, you are the baseball czar and you are in charge of everything. And there's no title above this. We are just going to call you, as long as you work for our team, we're just calling you the baseball god. And that's it. Like, there's no better title. We will never give anyone ever permission to talk to you ever, because we've given you the top title.
Emperor of baseball Emperor operations. Of baseball. You get to decide everything. It's an interesting question. I was trying to look up like what the Blue Jays and Mark Shapiro, Mark Shapiro. You know, because he had been Cleveland's, I think, team president, might have been president of baseball ops. And then he got team president and CEO of the Blue of Toronto when they were hiring for more of a business side of things. I think it'd be difficult for the Mets I don't know exactly how you carve out that position, especially because the position that Doug is describing is literally the one that Sandy Alderson already has right. The title for. You would have to shift there. I think the more interesting question would be, like, what does adding potential ownership stakes do to the calculus? Does that count as a promotion if you're willing to offer that kind of equity in the franchise? Because Epstein has talked about wanting that moving forward, to have a stake in ownership, not just decision-making wise, but financially. Billy Beane already has that in Oakland. So again, it wouldn't be a promotion for him, but you would think that he might want to match that in a move to New York. Stearns doesn't have that in Milwaukee. I think if it would probably be considered tampering if through back channels you let him know that that would be a possibility in New York. If he wanted to kind of nudge his way out of Milwaukee. So it is strange. You know, Andrew Baggerly at The Athletic wrote about this about a month ago now in September with Farhan Zaidi and the Giants, that the way that Major League Baseball does it with all of these, like, none of these titles are standardized really across the sport. You have a lot of general managers who are executive vice president or senior vice president, and general manager. Like, Brian Cashman, for instance, is not a president of baseball ops. He's, a senior vice president and general manager. The Mets could conceivably offer him a promotion and talk to him that way. Chaim Bloom in Boston is not a president of baseball ops. He's the chief baseball executive, chief baseball officer. He's a CBO, not a PBO.
But that's a made-up title, right? That's Doug's point. Like, that's not a real, that's not a job. Like, no one has that job at any other company, right? Like, there's no, like, Campbell Soup doesn't have a chief baseball operator, officer.
Chief soup officer. Right. Whereas, like, the NFL, everything is standardized across franchises. So every team has the same kind of hierarchy. It's actually more complex when you get below the general manager level and you start to get into assistant general managers. And I'm trying to remember what the title was for Adam Guttridge when he was with the Mets. He was one of Brody Van Wagenen's, like, number two people right behind him. But it was, you know, it was like director of advancement or something, and assistant general manager. You know, they put different titles on what you're heading up below the general manager level. It's probably time, considering we've got teams trying to talk to other people from other organizations as frequently as they do, to make it more standardized across the sport. I think that make it easier for everyone involved to know what's a promotion and what's not. It'd be interesting to see how the Mets would try to finagle their way around that, especially with someone like Stearns. Neander, I think you can't even really consider. He just signed a 5-year extension like 3 weeks ago. So he's not going to leave Tampa. He doesn't want to leave Tampa, is my understanding.
He could be emperor of baseball.
If he wanted to leave Tampa for the Mets, he wouldn't have signed that deal. Like, he could have just left no problem this winter. They could maybe try. I think the rest of the league would be onto it and would not like it. I think.
Someone's gonna do it, right? Like that. And Doug sort of made that point in a PS. Like, hopefully, no other executive listened to it. You know, I mean, this, everybody wants a competitive advantage. If that's the move you got to make to hire someone, like, someone's gonna do that. And why can't it for once be the Mets?
Like, the president of baseball operations kind of evolved organically. I don't know who the first one to have that title was. I feel like, you know, like Dave Dombrowski has had it at most of his stops. I think going back to Detroit, he's had it at least.
I thought Shapiro
existed before that.
I thought Shapiro was pretty early with that too, right? When they like promoted him out of the GM spot.
Right. And that was about a decade ago. I think it was, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page because I was looking him up earlier. That was at the end of 2010.
Yeah.
I do think it existed a little bit before then. But I, you know, I don't know for sure. That's a harder. I tried looking that up recently. It was a harder thing to track down than I like. So yeah, I mean, someone's going to try it at some point. I don't know what you like. We joke about emperor and king of baseball operations. Like, I don't know how you come across to that. Like how you go about that. And I think the Mets would be. It would be transparent enough of an undertaking that the ownership of other teams who might be skeptical of Steve Cohen to begin with would do their very best to prevent it from happening.
Well, and Steve Cohen certainly doesn't seem like a guy to bend the rules to his advantage. We will be back to talk about all of this stuff, which I assume will still be very much in the air next week while the postseason is ongoing and the Mets are not.
Yes, and we'll have a lot of different off-season topics to tackle over the next couple of weeks. I laid out a bunch of them on the website this week with this winter in Mets, all the decisions they've got to make. But, you know, the free agent stuff and all that is going to, you know, obviously that waits till after the season. But so much of the decision making, we still don't know who's making the decisions. And that's the most important hire. And I've said it might be as important a hire as the Mets have made in their history. So that's the focus for them right now.
It is undoubtedly a big, big offseason for the Mets. And we will be around to talk about it for sure. Tim, peace out.
Adios.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.